Welcome to the South Cars Outreach Program. Join our training session in progress.
Good evening, everyone. This is Kilo 6 Sierra United November, and this is South Cars, the South Coast Amateur Radio Service. This net is conducted under the guidelines of the South Cars organization and further follows the rules outlined in FCC Part 97 in Good Amateur Practice. This SCAR server is supplied by the Great Lakes Reflector System, provided by Kilo Bravo 8, Zulu Golf Lima, and all contacts and requests for information will be handled through the net control. When contact with another station is made, please move off the system and establish your contact direct so the net may continue. In fairness to all, short-time stations will not be recognized as such. All stations will be worked in the order in which they have checked in. Information regarding our HF operation may be found at www.southcars.com and for this digital operation at www.voip.southcars.com. Your net control actually for this session is Gary, KC2RMO, with a backup of WQ1I. Gary's located in Syracuse, New York, and Paul is located in Danbury, Connecticut. I'm merely opening it tonight. My name is Kathy. My call sign is Kilo 6 Sierra United November, and my location is beautiful Vero Beach, Florida, where it's currently a temperature of 81 degrees, high today of about 85, and low tonight of about 68. But, you know, I think we have a full moon coming up because this week at school, my kids sure told me about that. Prior to starting, I'd like to ask if there's any emergency traffic or anything out of the ordinary that needs to be handled. If so, I ask you to come aboard. No emergency traffic, and that's always a great thing. But do we have anyone celebrating a birthday, either last week or this upcoming week, that would like to come aboard so we could say happy birthday to them? So if you're one of those stations, please come aboard. No birthday stations either. I know we had a couple stations that had birthdays this week and maybe last week, but they're not connected this evening. But this is our monthly Thursday informational net open forum. It's TIN for short. This net is conducted to provide information pursuant to amateur-related subjects and or other areas of general interest to those participating. All are encouraged to participate and ask questions of a guest speaker or speakers. Do you want to advise everyone connected this evening that the net is always recorded for future presentation on our website as a podcast? So if you've been part of the program, you most definitely will be part of that recording. I'm going to probably skip the announcements and just throw it right directly over to our NCS. But his topic for this evening is converting plastic to oil, and I'm really looking forward to the program this evening. So, Mr. Gary, KC2RMO, if you're ready to take over, I'm going to throw it in your direction. I will be there in the background as much as possible, but I'm sure you'll have a fantastic net. This is Kilo 6 Sierra United November calling all the way up north to KC2RMO.
Hey, thank you, Kathy, and hello, everybody, and welcome to this edition of the South Cars TIN. Now, right now, we have 61 degrees and cloudy skies here in Syracuse's beautiful outer Comstock section. And what a remarkable net we have for you tonight. A while back, I saw an amazing video that came from the United Nations University website. I put the URL in the text box so that anybody who wants to can just copy it and paste it into their browser and have a look at this thing. Now, the video showed the story of a man in Japan who invented a machine to convert certain types of plastic into oil. That's right, plastic into oil. Now, he states that the plastic comes from oil, and he thought that it would be logical to be able to turn it back into oil. He takes this machine to various third world countries and shows the people there how they can convert their waste plastic into oil. Oil they can use in their villages to power equipment, make electricity, and all the things that conventional oil is used for. Now, let me buy a nickel here. His device is a small-scale model of a much larger equipment that he produces. His company makes the machines in various sizes, and he has 60 of them right now in place at farms, fisheries, and small factories in Japan, and several abroad, too. So I asked myself, is this for real? If it is, why aren't we doing more of it? We certainly have enough waste plastic, and we surely can use the oil. So I started to do some research, and here's what I found. The process that he uses is an established scientific process known as thermal depolymerization. I said it right, I think. basically, the waste plastic is heated and the gas produced is condensed. The resulting product is an oil that can be refined into traditional products such as gasoline, kerosene, and the like. There really isn't a lot of information on this topic, but it does appear to be legitimate. There are a number of companies using large-scale devices doing this process commercially. Some claims are amazing, almost too good to be true, but if they are, listen to this. This is from the website technorati.com. Plastic waste has a high energy value, and that value has begun to be captured. Number two, three, and four plastics can now be put in the machine or into a machine to create oil that can be used just like regular oil. To top it off, it does it for, are you ready for this, 20 cents worth of electricity. Think about it. Reducing huge amounts of non-biodegradable waste and producing cheap energy from it. Well, maybe the days of the big V8s aren't over yet, but it almost sounds too good to be true. Remember the cold fusion craze back in the 80s. So what do you think? I'm going to buy another nickel. If you've seen the video, it certainly looks like it's for real, and it's being shown under the auspices of a legitimate organization. If we can harness this on a large scale in the United States and worldwide, what do you imagine the implications would be? We'll take check-ins right now, and later we'll look at this a little deeper as we turn plastic into oil here on the TIN. I'm KC2RMO. This is South Cars, and we're taking check-ins right now.
One India.
Six Victor.
Victor X-ray Papa.
Hey, we're getting off to a good start, and we'll get things going with One India. Hey, Paul, come on aboard.
Hey, Gary. Good evening, and thanks for doing the net tonight. And it's my pleasure to be here as your backup. And hello, Gordon, Rick, everybody else on South Cars this evening. Well, Gary, I mean, based on your question there, I'm thinking I'm going to start looking for that 1968 Firebird 400 that I've been pining after. That's the first car that I learned how to drive on. And I wish I had it. But all seriousness aside, I didn't see that video. I didn't get a chance to look at that. I did read up on some other sources that I found about this, and I guess hold on, let me drop it a second here so I don't cough in everyone's ear. I guess I would be put into the column as very interested, but still skeptical as to this whole thing. I mean, from a chemical point of view, it makes sense. Generally, anything that can be made can be unmade in one way or the other. And my question would be, you know, at what cost? Now, some of the things that I saw were claiming some very high yield of this oil or diesel fuel that comes out of this process, which I'm skeptical about, things like 80 to 85% yield of theoretical. And the idea that you get it out cheaper than the amount of money that you want to spend doing the process, I'm also skeptical about. But then I was starting to rethink that a little bit, and I'll tell you why. As you might know, I'm involved in the chemical industry, and that doesn't make me any kind of expert on this particular process at all, trust me. But one thing I do know is you have certain costs, you know, that go into any chemical process. And one of them, and sometimes it can be a big one depending on what it is you're making, are the starting materials. And in this case, your starting materials essentially are free. You're taking things that people are throwing away that are sitting in our landfills already, just sitting there. So there's essentially very little cost on your starting materials. Then you have the equipment itself, of course, and the power to run it. And I would say that any kind of oil, as the price of oil goes up higher and higher, it's going to make this process more and more viable, is basically what it comes down to. If oil were back at $50 a gallon, there's no way that I would believe that the electricity or the natural gas or however it is that you're running this machine, the energy that you're putting in, it is going to cost more than what's coming out. But as that oil keeps going higher and higher, maybe it can work. So interested but skeptical. WQ1I, Danbury, Connecticut, back to net.
Hey, thank you, Paul. I think that's kind of where I was when I first started looking into this. But I have become a little bit more sold on it than I was when I started. And one thing, and you gave a mention about yield, okay? And I was going to mention this a little bit later on in the net, but I'm trying to find the statistic right here. There's an Oregon-based company is doing this on a large-scale basis. They say that their yield is, they can convert 10 tons of plastic into 60 barrels of oil a day. They do that for a cost of $60 a barrel. So currently, I checked the price of a barrel of oil last night. Oil's right now about $99 a barrel. So they're way ahead of the game. And as you say, your startup materials are free, you know. So and it looks like, and again, this guy doesn't get into any specifics. It's just a little 5 or 6 minute video on the if you follow that link that I put in the text box on the United Nations website, Our World website, and this gentleman has a portable machine that he uses to demonstrate the process and get things going. It takes it all around the world to get people start to thinking of converting their plastic into oil. And it looks very simple. I mean, this tabletop demo that he's got is very simple. Let me buy a nickel. And it appears as if it's just a tight vessel and a heat source and some sort of condensing unit. He cools it through a water bath. The condensing unit runs through the water bath, cools out, and draws off the product, which is oil. So he's got something going there, and it looks for real when you look at it. So I'm willing at least to give him the benefit of the doubt. Now, how it all shakes out, cost wise, I'm not sure. And I tried to see if I could find some figures on that. There's not a lot of information on it. This is pretty new stuff. I do know that there are some pretty good-sized companies that are starting up with it anyway. There is some equipment out there that's available commercially. This gentleman in Japan is not the only guy that's making this stuff. So there's a few companies making it. So this may be something that we're going to be seeing more of. And I just may be driving around as you and your 68 Firebird. I will be in my 64 Galaxy 500 with the 390. So life is going to get good again, I think. So it'll be all right. Paul, I hope you join us a little bit later on. We'll move it along to 6. Victor Gordon, come on in.
Hey, thanks, Gary. Good evening to you, Paul. And hi to Rick up there and everybody that's listening. Gordon, KY6V. We're currently, believe it or not, at 86 degrees still, but it's on its way down. We had sunset just a little while ago, and we'll be about 67 degrees early morning. I've been thinking the same thing that Paul, and I guess you have, Gary. The practicality of somebody taking this on as a household project, you know, seems a little strained. First of all, where are you going to stockpile 10 tons of plastic products? I don't know how many weeks or months or years it would take me to accumulate that, at least on what we use. Two-car garage, yes. I don't think I could get 60 barrels in there to fill up and still have run place to run around a forklift to move these 60. So, at any rate, it sounds like it's got to be a commercial operation. I mean, you've got to have some land to do it. And then I ask, I wonder if your research has given you any cost figures. I haven't run across anything. You know, what does a decent size unit for producing this cost? And how much turf does it take to set it up? At any rate, it would be nice if we could set up a small unit. But then you have to, you know, at the home. But then you also, let me buy a nickel, you also have to get this refined, as I understand it. It has to go through another step. So what do? Take the crude oil, barrel it, and send it to a refinery, and there we've got some more cost. Am I reading that right, Gary? Back to you, sir. KY6V.
Yeah, there has to be. I mean, and again, this what this guy had here, what you see in this video, then again, you'll see the URL in the text box. What you'll see is this gentleman has a small-scale version of a large commercial machine that he demonstrates around the world to show folks the process. It's fully working, though. It really does do the job. He gets, they show him putting in a couple of plastic bottles and some plastic waste and sealing down the top of this vessel and firing the thing up, and you do see this come out. He gets about, I'm going to guess, just taking it off the top of my head. He gets a couple of cups of oil out of the thing for what he puts it into it. And he takes it outside and he lights it. All right, so immediately he has something that's usable probably, for firing up a boiler anyway. But it's not like, let me just clear my throat here for a minute. It's not like he has, if you remember the movie Back to the Future, which is my favorite movie of all time, he doesn't have it like a Mr. Fusion, this is just a demo unit. The stuff he does, he has a company that's called Blest, B-L-E-S-T company, and it's a Japanese company. And they make large-scale versions of this stuff. Of this equipment, and really they focus on. I think where their focus is more in terms of for municipalities where you have the dump. The city's running the dump. They're taking the plastic that they get into the dump and converting it into oil, and then they're using that for their own purposes. Whether they're heating buildings with it, or if they have a transit system. They're refining that into diesel and running buses and stuff on it. So I expect it's something like that. So you don't have that portable type of a thing going on. You're not going to have a garage full of plastic containers that you're going to turn into and fill up the car with. Maybe in the future they'll have something like that. As this process, because it again appears to be a very new situation. So maybe in the future, we look 10 years down the line, maybe there will be a quotes Mr. Fusion for plastic products. We'll see. It would be pretty darn cool. Take the instead of taking the recyclables out to the curb, put it into this thing and then go fill up the car. I kind of like that idea. It's really pretty neat. We're talking tonight, in case you're just joining us, we're talking about turning plastic into oil. Apparently at some level it's doable, and it's a pretty exciting thing, at least to me anyway, where you can take plastic, which is clogging up our landfills and is a real enemy to the environment. You just don't get rid of plastic once it goes into the landfill. And we're turning it into something useful, oil. which means we all might be driving 390s again. So, you know, it could be pretty cool. So that's the topic tonight. We've got some more information coming up a little bit later. But we're going to go out to Ohio right now and talk to Rick out in Chillicothe. And I slaughtered that town again. I'm sorry, Rick. I do it every time. But VXP, come on, boy.
This is N1 VXP. It's okay. Just remember it was the first capital of Ohio. Otherwise, it's definitely an interesting topic. Kind of reminds me of the one I've been hearing on the news lately of taking carbon out of air and making it into a solid object. Otherwise, this plastic to oil is definitely something. I found a website that really answers part of the question. Let me drop for a second, and in that second I'll put the website up on the text box. I noticed, according to this particular website, they really have the process down to making three liquid products. Number six, oil, which is like a fuel oil that could be used in boilers, like in buildings. And number two, heating oil or diesel oil, and naphtha. Those are the main products, but they also have some other byproducts, different gases. So it definitely sounds like something that I think the waste to fuel or waste to energy type of stations don't have to burn everything. They can convert plastics and have another fuel source. But quite interesting. N1TXB, back to net control.
Thanks, Rick. Yeah, I saw it. It helps if you've seen the video. But this gentleman in Japan shows that, you know, this can be refined into various oil-based products. And as you say, you've got the two different grades of heating oil and diesel. He also had he was showing a container of what he said was gasoline as well. So I would suspect that once you get the crude oil from this, that you can make this into any oil product at all. And again, you think about what this really means. If they can do this on a large scale, and I've got a, I'm going to be talking a little bit too. There's a company not far from here in Niagara Falls, New York, that is doing this on a pretty large scale. And I'm going to tell you about what they're up to in just a little bit. But when you think about how much plastic there is out there, I have some statistics here that are pretty pretty interesting. For instance, typically made from petroleum, it's estimated that 7% of the world's annual oil production is used to produce and manufacture plastics. Now, that's more than the oil consumed by the entire African continent. Okay, so just take the entire continent of Africa. And you figure that that's you take that the consumption for a year, and that's more than that consumption just to make the plastic that's being put into our landfill. Plastic's carbon footprint includes landfilling and incineration, and its recycle rate is dismally low around the globe. It's not just here, but as you go around the world, people just don't recycle it. It's hard stuff to recycle. You really don't have many options with that. So you either bury it or you try to come up with some creative way to reuse it, but it doesn't lend itself to recycling. Let me buy a nickel. Plastic trash is also polluting our oceans and washing up on beaches around the world. Tons of plastic from the U.S. and Japan are floating in the Pacific Ocean, killing mammals and birds. Today, Americans discard about 33.6 million tons of plastic each year, but only 6.5% of it is recycled and 7.7% is burned in waste-to-energy facilities, which create electricity or heat from garbage. Now, the rest ends up in landfills where it makes, and this is a staggering statistic right here. The rest ends up in landfills where it may take up to 1,000 years to decompose and potentially leak pollutants into the soil and water. Now, it's estimated there are also hundreds of millions of tons of plastic debris floating around in the oceans, threatening the health and safety of marine life. Now, if we burn plastic, we generate toxins and a large amount of CO2. If we convert it to oil, we save CO2 and at the same time increase people's awareness about the value of plastic garbage. And that was a quote from Akinori Ito, who is the CEO of Blessed. He's the guy that you're going to see in the video that I put in the text box. He's the fellow on the United Nations video. So companies are doing this. They're doing it all over the place, and one is right in our neighborhood anyway, here in central New York. Actually, it's in western New York towards Niagara Falls. I'll buy a nickel and let me tell you about that. A company in Niagara Falls that recycles plastic into oil on a large scale has been doing this now for about a year and a half, 2 years. And not only plastics, but they're turning old Crayola crayons into diesel fuel. So kindergarten teachers take note. There's others too. So the question is, why aren't we doing more of this? It seems to me that you'd have to have your head examined if you didn't do it. We'll talk about the cost effectiveness in just a little bit, but right now we'll take some more check-ins. We're talking about plastic into oil. Apparently it's for real, and we'd like to hear what you're thinking about this. It's the TIN. I'm KC2RMO, and this is South Cars looking for check-ins right now.
Sierra United November.
Okay, we've got Kathy. Come on aboard, please.
Well, thank you, Gary. It looks like I'm the only one coming aboard at this moment. Very interesting net you're having this evening. I have a question for you, but you sort of hit home with the Crayola crayons. Even though I'm not an elementary teacher, I do use the crayons for my history classes whenever they're doing maps. And so I do have those, and you know, after they use those and they get way far down, I think probably most teachers don't recycle. They probably end up throwing them out or doing something else with them. But I have a question for you. I live in a gated community. I don't know, 300 and some homes. And, you know, I have garbage collection on Mondays and Thursdays. And I think it's, I don't know if it's 2 days, but I know it's on Tuesdays. They have the containers out where they collect recyclables. And I've been very curious, as long as I've lived here, about 7 years, where they take these recyclables, because it's still the garbage people that pick it up, and they throw all those plastic containers, but it's also, I am really thinking it's, you know, cans as well, anything you can recycle, newspapers. So I'm sort of really curious, what are you thinking? Where are they taking all these recyclables? Could all that be made into oil? If so, we could have quite a bundle of oil. So, just a suggestion. I'm just curious on maybe what you think, where they take that recyclable. They don't take it to the landfill, I don't think. So where do they take it? Back to you, Gary, and thanks once again for running the net.
Thanks, Kathy. There's if you think about it, that stuff's got to go somewhere. You're right. And not very far from where we live, there is a facility that takes care of that sort of thing for Onondaga County. And what they do is they separate the different types of recyclables out, and the stuff that's combustible, they burn. And with that, they create steam to power they actually sell it to Syracuse University. Because that's a large customer. SU is a really large school, and they have a large, very large physical plant. And one of the customers that they have for the steam is SU. They also have county facilities that aren't too far from the plant that they pipe it to. So that's used that way. So I imagine other municipalities have a similar setup where they take those recyclables and they separate them out, and they use what's combustible to produce some sort of, you know, to reclaim some sort of energy from it. What's great about this process, what this is so impressive, is that you can take this this plastic, and just about everything's plastic now, you know, and you can turn this into oil that can be used to power things like, you know, fleet vehicles and or heating oil, you know, that sort of a thing. So the usage is a lot broader than just creating a steam product from your waste, and it's a lot more practical. I came across another thing too. There's a, when we were talking about municipalities, there's a thing called the Envion oil generator, which is a large version of this machine that this gentleman in Japan makes. His company is called Blessed. This is the Envion company. It is a different process, slightly different process, but it is a little simpler, I guess, than his. But it's not as efficient. So this guy has a more efficient process and probably a little more cost effective. But I guess Envion got into the game on the large scale stuff a little bit before he actually did. So this is going to be one of those, fields that's going to be very competitive as it catches on. Again, we're in a, it appears as if we're at the very beginning of a new technology, and that this sort of a thing could be really, really big for us. And you talk about what does this stuff cost? Let me buy a nickel. I don't know what it costs to buy an Envion oil generator, and I don't know what it costs to buy one of these gentlemen's machines. But like I was talking to Paul earlier about, if oil is right now $99 a barrel, there's a company in Oregon called Agilyx, A-G-I-L-Y-X, that produces processing systems that convert ground unsorted plastic of all types into synthetic crude oil, which can be refined into ultra-low sulfur diesel, gasoline, or even jet fuel, as well as synthetic lubricants and greases, some of which can be made, believe it or not, back into plastic. Now, these units are designed to go where the plastic is. This is portable stuff, okay? The municipal waste facilities, waste management companies, and recyclers. So they can actually... they actually have a version of this that can travel from site to site. The base system can convert 10 tons of plastic, as I was saying earlier, into 60 barrels of oil every day. Cost about $60 a barrel, and the oil, of course, oil at $99 a barrel, that's a good deal. So that's what we're talking about tonight. It seems to hold great promise, for sure. Maybe we can kind of turn a lemon into lemonade, if you will. That there's an awful lot of plastic out there, and we've been wondering what to do about this for years. Plenty of plastic and not enough oil. So it seems like a marriage made in heaven. You know, all you have to do is make sure that it's for real, and maybe just throw this thing into high gear and see what we can do. That's the topic tonight. We'd like to hear some check-ins. We'll take them right now. I'm KC2RMO looking for check-ins on the TIN.
Calling my Charlie Bravo.
And 6 Victor, recheck.
And Victor X-Ray Papa, recheck.
All right, three fine stations right there, and we'll pick it up with George. LCB, come on aboard.
Well, good evening, Gary. Thanks for doing the program tonight. Boy, you sure got my head going in all different directions. Kind of had a brain drain over the past couple of days, but I'm on the mend, so what can I say? Top of the day to you, my friend. Yeah, you know, I just thinking, well, you know, if you ever get the automobile industry tied in there, you know, come trash pickup day, you know, we can just pull up to somebody's recycle bin and open our trunk, but I think maybe they'll call that a hopper and load that up with plastic jugs and all and just go chug-lugging down the street while everything is being processed. What can I say, you know, there's all kind of ways to do it. I remember years ago when they first started coming out with this plastic that the dry cleaners used to put over your clothes. You know, we used to twist that up into a rope like and tie it in knots in, you know, oh, 2 or 3 inches up the rope, you know, and light one end of it there, and you can watch that thing burn and bubble and ooze and drip, and you know, right then and there. And that was way back yonder. It taught me they, you know, hey, there's some type of it's all base, so you know, they got me thinking way back then. So took a long time coming. I mean, everything, I think we can find a way to recycle. We just have to be aware, and there'd be a whole lot more of it if people wasn't so interested in trying to make the big buck. I understand cost that's involved, but you know, there's a point where you got slaves and you got taskmasters. Top of the evening to you, KW4, he's my Charlie Bravo.
And the top of the evening to you too, George. And it's great to hear from you. You know, it's funny, you know, you mentioned, I don't know if you heard it earlier, but you were talking about, yeah, you know, on the recycle day, you just open up the trunk of the car and put your milk bottles in. And it's like, it is, it's like the Mr. Fusion machine that they had on the DeLorean in Back to the Future, you know. But apparently this is kind of like where we're heading, that this process appears to be at least to some degree viable. I'm going to put a little URL in the text box again here. And Paul, maybe you'd like to take a look at that and just see from a chemist's point of view if that looks at least reasonable. These are yields that this gentleman from Blessed is talking about that he can get. And apparently the yield is determined by the type of plastic that you put in there, and I guess it makes that makes sense too. But different types of plastics give you a better or worse yield depending upon what they are. So let's see if Paul can weigh in a little bit on that and see if that looks anywhere near reasonable. As we're charging him with that, we'll move it along to Six Victor and Gordon. Come on aboard.
Well, thank you, Gary. I'm sitting back thinking about George's comments. Hi, George. You know, we're going to have a pregnant trunk. It's going to have to be a pretty good size if we're going to throw all this plastic in and then let it do its thing. And then where are they going to put the gas filter? Gary, I have been so seriously opposed to the automotive industry sticking the bloomin' gas pump inside of the gas tank instead of where it used to hang right next to the block up front. It's a major episode to change that pump out when it has to be pumped. But then again, think about all of the hula hoops that we have around the world. We can recycle those babies, too. Hey, to give you a little bit of humor, let me buy a nickel. I think you know, Gary, I've been a pilot for quite a number of years. I started flying in 59, so that's something like, what, 54 years maybe? Can you imagine? I can imagine. I was sitting back giggling at myself here a minute ago. I'm straight and level at 10,000 feet, and all of a sudden the engine starts popping and spurting. And I say to myself, doggone it, it must have been that milk bottle. Go ahead, Gary, KY6V.
Yeah, you got to shop at the store that's got the best quality plastic. You know, if you're going to put that in the plane, you got to go for the good stuff. Hey, I want to know, too. I'm dying to know. What moron decided to put that pump in or near the gas tank? I still do not understand why they did that. A gas pump belongs, as you say, on the block. Period. You know, and I can't. It's ridiculous. Just to sidetrack for a minute. It's like for guys that used to or girls. That used to work on their cars. It's ridiculous. I won't even touch a car nowadays. I used to do all my own work. I haven't felt confident about working on a car since the late 80s. You know, it's not the same thing. I will not go near them. You know, my mechanic loves it, but I'm strictly no touch. I mean, you know, I don't even do my own oil changes anymore. We're talking about, and speaking of oil, we're talking about plastic into oil tonight, a process that appears very promising and appears to have some degree of legitimacy to it. And it does not look, and again, I didn't get, I'll throw that out, too, for anybody who remembers it. Do you remember cold fusion back in the late 80s, which was supposed to be the miracle of the century, that we were all going to be having unlimited energy, and it really was. Every little garage would have its cold fusion reactor, and life would have been good, and it turned out to be a bunch of baloney. But this appears to have some substance to it, and as a matter of fact, it is being used practically right now, and appears to be a growth type of a technology. So VXP, Rick was checking in with a recheck, and we'd love to hear from him, so come on aboard.
Yeah, this is N1VXP. Yeah, did a little more research on that plastictooil.com website. JBI is a company out of Niagara Falls, New York. And reading a little bit further, it says that they use 2.8 million pounds of plastic can convert to 482,000 gallons of end-user fuels like diesel, number 6, and naphtha. There is a black product that it sounds like could be used in the steel industry as well as some regular gas that comes off the process, butane and a few others. So it sounds like all this recycling can do quite well. The end-user fuels would be low sulfur, so that would be good for the environment as well. Definitely worth checking that website out and reading all the information there. N1TXP, back to net control.
Thanks, Rick. And yeah, without a doubt, there's some great information there. And that's pretty. That bears out everything that I was reading about it too. That the product that you get is good from the stuff. It's not just some, you know, hokey product that sort of works. But this is the real deal. And you do. You get low sulfur diesel. You get high quality heating oils and other products, you know, from it. It is good stuff. I looked at these yield figures that this gentleman from Blessed put up there, and it looks like, depending upon what you're putting into it, and this guy's running like AstroTurf through the thing, you know. He's getting a 44% yield from AstroTurf, but it goes way up. I mean, when you do things like when you put in like plastic bottles or CD cases, okay, he's getting 84% yield from plastic bottles. He's getting 80% yield from CD cases, and it varies. It varies a lot depending upon the type of plastic and a couple other factors too. But it really does work. And like you said, I mean, here's that figure you just quoted. You're getting 400,000, with Rick, was it 400,000 barrels or was it 400,000 gallons?
It was 480,000 gallons out of 2.8 million pounds, which is roughly about 1,400 tons.
That's a lot of oil. From something, especially when you consider all that plastic would have gone into the landfill, and it just would have been sitting there for the next 1,000 years. Causing problems with the next 100 tons of plastic that goes on top of it, etc. So you can see that this is really worth looking into. This is something I think that's going to be a great benefit to everybody, whether however it gets implemented, whether it becomes a product for municipalities alone, or for whether it gets down to the individual level, and we're all sitting here with our plastic oil converters in our houses, and it's like, yeah, give me 3 gallons of diesel. You know, you just hit the knob, and away you go. It's something that looks like it's going to become a part of our everyday life in some fashion. In the years to come, and it's really great because again, we have a chance to do something beneficial to the environment. We have a chance to provide low cost energy to municipalities, and at the same time reduce dependence on foreign oil, and that's a big one to me too. I can certainly remember, and I think anybody that's in this age group or a little bit older. Can remember a time when we didn't even import oil. I mean, or when we did, it was just a tiny fraction of what we used. We're, of course, a long ways off from that, too. So that's the deal. We're talking about plastic to oil tonight, and it is it does appear to be real. There are other technologies out there, too. Let me just buy a nickel. There are other technologies out there, too, and I think earlier on in the net, Rick had mentioned an idea where they're taking carbon out of the air and using it to turn into other materials. There's stuff out there that is just we're seeing in its infancy, and it's stuff that's got to be some of that stuff's not going to be turned into a viable technology. Some of it is, and I think all of it really needs to be explored. We've got so much on at stake for the planet. I think we've all pretty well realized that no matter where you sat on the topic of global warming, there's something to it. Whether or not you buy into it completely or not, I think we can pretty well say that there's something to it. And even if you don't believe it, what's it going to hurt? Right, you know, at the very least, maybe we end up with cheaper oil, and that's okay too. Let me buy a nickel. So that's the topic tonight. We'll take another round of check-ins if anybody'd like to come aboard and talk about plastic to oil or recycling in general or what have you. We'd like to hear from you. I'm KC2RMO. This is the TIN, and this is South Cars. Looking for check-ins right now.
One India.
Sierra United November.
One India, come aboard, sir.
Hey, Gary. I was going to start talking to you about global warming, but I'll save that for another time. But I did as you asked, and I went to this website, and I'm looking at these things, and it is very interesting. For the most part, most of the yields they're impressive. They don't look like they've been faked. except for one. There's one here. I forget which one it was now, but the claim is that they've recovered everything. There's the material balance on one of these is perfect, and that's never going to happen ever. So that one, I'm not quite sure whichever one that was. But and by material balance, I mean the product that they got out plus the residue adds up to the total weight of the material that they had going into it. Never going to happen. But the rest of them are, and that was probably just a mistake, the rest of them look pretty good. And I was kind of pondering the very first one there with those look like plastic. They call them lactic acid beverage containers, otherwise known as soda bottles. And I was trying to figure out whether the amount of oil that was produced was worth more or less than the 5 cents per container that you'd get if you returned it, took it back to the store. So you got 422 mils there, which is about a tenth of a gallon. So at $3.50 a gallon for oil, you're looking at 35 cents, and for those five bottles, you only get 25 cents back, so you're better off with the oil. But it is interesting stuff. The other thing that caught my eye was the artificial lawn, otherwise known as AstroTurf here in the United States. If you take a good look at the graduate cylinder there, there's a nice little oil layer of water on the bottom of the oil there. It looks like somebody mistook the oil that came out of the process for their salad dressing there, Gary. So I'm not sure what's going on with that picture, but it is very interesting. It seems consistent to me. It looks like the more highly pure and processed the materials are to begin with, like, for instance, the toy cases, you get better yields coming out. And, of course, the stuff that's pretty much garbage to begin with, you get a lot less from. So it all makes sense. So if this stuff isn't real, they're doing a really nice job of presenting bogus data, all I can say. I'm beginning to believe it. So I guess I'm getting more gullible in my old age, so or less critical, whoever you want to put it. Back to Net, WQNI.
Hey, thank you, Paul. I think I am, too. I mean, again, when I started looking at this thing, the first thing that came to my mind was cold fusion. You know, they were such a big, I remember, because man, you know, they had the fishing pole out, and they were reeling me in on that one, man. I was like, get me some, you know, find out where I can invest in this. I just want to be all over this. This is great stuff, you know. And of course, it turned into such a fiasco. But this and that's the way I was starting to look at this initially. And I the more you read about it, the more legitimate it became. And again, I don't think you look at a prestigious school like the United Nations University, and they're not going to have something like that on their website if it was just a bunch of bogus stuff. So I think that added some credibility to the whole thing. But it does appear to be legitimate. I mean, and again, I looked at this page with the yields on it, too. Maybe the water on the bottom of that AstroTurf, maybe somebody made a mistake and watered the grass, you know, something like that. But overall, I mean, it seemed to me legitimate. I mean, I don't know enough about to say, you know, is an 84% yield from soda bottles realistic? Does that seem viable? But it seemed like it could be. So that didn't look bad. And again, you know, what's interesting, and this is totally non-scientific, but what's interesting is when you watch this video, and you watch this gentleman talk about his process and what he's doing with it, you know, he's not like one of these guys that you're, you know, well, I'm going to go out and make a zillion bucks off of this thing, and I'm going to be the king of the world, and blah blah blah. He's a very humble man, and really all he wants to do is you know, his focus is on getting rid of the plastic. I mean, I don't even think he really cares about the money or anything like that. It's just that he's got a way to get rid of plastic, and help some folks along the way too, which is, you know, again, it's one of those things. Maybe as I'm getting older, I don't know, like you say, you know. But to me, it would seem like a very noble thing. And I'm hoping that it's as real as I believe it to be right now, because it really does hold some great promise. So thank you, Paul, and thank you for weighing in on that. It does, to me, seem to be legitimate, too. We'll move it along to SUN, and Kathy, come on aboard.
Well, thank you so much, Gary. And, you know, I have so much little comments to say here. I'll have to drop it a few times. But this is going to be my last check-in, I think, tonight, because you have probably a lot more aboard. But I'm going to go in and listen to the Detroit Tigers and the Boston Red Sox for this final, you know, these playoffs. I've been watching it a little bit, so I'm going to do that. But, you know, today my principal told me that no question is stupid or no statement is stupid. She's willing to listen to everything, so I'm going to just throw some things out there for you tonight. You talked about the cars. You won't go in and work on a car, you know, those computers. You know, don't like those computers in my car. I don't like that yellow light that comes on all the time. And I've never changed oil, so it always has been done by somebody else or taken somewhere. But, you know, they've changed. Everything has been changed throughout our life. But, you know, I wanted to thank Paul for being here tonight and to encourage everyone. This is a little off topic, but you know, starting Saturday, we're going to start our new nets, and Paul and I are starting the very first AM connection, so I hope everyone will join us for that. But, Gary, I have a question for you. I'm an old person, as you are and some of the rest of us. Let me drop it here for a moment. Like I said, there's those of us who were back in the day when they had paper bags in the grocery stores. Any store, now it's all plastic. They give you plastic. I do save my plastic bags. I use it to cover my waste paper basket. I use it to carry things into school, to carry my lunch with. But it usually goes in the waste paper basket, so it's not being recycled. It's been being put in those landfills. So why did we change to plastic for those garbage bags, for those bags in the store? I'm sort of curious about that, thinking way back as well. Age-wise here again, Gary, milk jugs that used to be glass weren't plastic. You know, you had to return those milk jugs to the milkman to get milk. So with that, we've gone to plastic. And so what made us change to plastic is one of my questions. And Paul's comment about 5 cents for every bottle in the state of Florida. We don't get that 5 cents or the 10 cents. State of Michigan, I know we do. But it's not recyclable in every state. So a lot of people just throw them on the side of the road. I see it quite often. So I think that has pretty much, I haven't gone to the website yet, but I will. That pretty much is my questions for everyone out there. I want to thank you, Gary, once again for doing that, and maybe hopefully you can answer some of those questions for me. Back to you, Gary, and, you know, no for the Red Sox this year. Hopefully it'll be the Tigers. Back to you, KC2RMO.
Hey, thank you, Kathy. For you, I hope it's the Tigers, but, you know, my heart. A little bit to the northeast of here, okay. but I hope for your sake it does turn out to be Detroit. In one word, and I don't have specifics to back this up, but in one word, I would say the answer to your question is cheap. Basically, that's it. That it's cheap. That it probably you can buy a roll of 1,000 plastic bags for the price of maybe, you know, 500 paper bags. I've never looked at it, and I couldn't tell you for sure, but I would guess that to be the case. And the same thing with milk containers, that you have a certain cost associated with a glass container, and that when you return that, I know we have one large dairy here. It's called Burn Dairy, and it's great milk. It really is. If you ever get to to the central part of New York State and you want to have the best chocolate milk you ever had in your life, go to a Burn Dairy store and just get some chocolate milk. It's amazing. But they are one of the few people that you can go to and get a glass container for your milk. I believe I forget what the cost is for that glass bottle, but you pay extra for it. You bring it back with you the next time around, and they give you a fresh bottle in a glass container. But there is it's a fairly steep amount of money for that glass. So we get the nickel a bottle here for regular recyclables, but that is a thing that they do on their own at Burn. That's over and above that, and I keep wanting to say it's like 50 cents more or something like that. But I'm not 100% sure, but that's what that is all about anyway. So I think it's all about economics. I think it really boils down to that. Unfortunately, that's how it goes. So we're talking about plastic to oil and occasional occasional trips over to the Red Sox, but that's what we're talking about tonight anyway. We'll take some more check-ins. Let's see what we've got going out there, if we've got enough in us for maybe one more round. So we'll throw it out there, taking check-ins right now on the TIN.
6, Victor, recheck number 3.
Victor X-Ray Papa, recheck unknown number.
1, India, numero 3.
All right, well, there's three good candidates right there. We'll pick it up with 6, Victor.
Thanks, Gary. You got 2 threes on the drawing here and 1 no number. You know, doggone your buttons, Gary. I always thought it was save the trees, and you're saying, no, it's cheaper. You're probably right. Hey, the question that I have for you is... do you have any idea in your research what the cost is? Once we've converted the plastic to the oil, I'm going to call it a crude oil for lack of some other proper name, or the result of the transposition. What's the cost of the refining? How much does that add on to the overall process of putting something in your gas tank? Over.
Well, I'm not sure. I don't have a specific figure there. I do have the cost of converting it from plastic to crude. So it certainly looks competitive, and it certainly looks actually superior when you look at it. If you look at this one figure that I had based on this company, this Agilex company, where they convert 10 tons of plastic into 60 barrels of oil a day. All right, now it's 60 barrels of oil each day, and they do it for about $60 a barrel. So that's a barrel of crude, you know, like we would figure a barrel of crude oil coming off a ship somewhere. So $60 versus $99 a barrel. Now, how much does it cost to refine it? I'm not really sure, but. Again, my, and maybe Paul could answer this a little bit better, because I'm not entirely sure what goes into the process of refining crude into lighter oils. There's a process. Obviously, I know you have a refraction process, and you have all this stuff that goes on, but I'm not. Familiar enough with it to really comment on it, but I would imagine the process is the same, and so the prices would be roughly the same, but maybe because of the nature of this stuff, it's a little more, a little less. I'm not really sure, but right now, plastic to crude for about $60 a barrel, and that's what they've got there.
Okay, well, let's see what Paul has to say on this. You know, you gotta. If you're looking the difference between, let me see if I've got it. Yeah, it looks like it. The difference of $60 to process what we're talking about here tonight. $99 to $100. Let's round it off. Say it's $100 a barrel out of these other guys. You got to deflate that by the profit margin that they're trying to make, which is astronomical. And the refining costs and so on and so forth. So I don't know what those ratios are. I can tell you that I've known for years that in the restaurant business, getting away from oil for a moment, is the raw cost of the ingredients before the meal is cooked is then inflated three times in order to get what you pay for when you sit down at the table. Go ahead, Gary, KY6V, over.
Well, if you look at it that way, then, you know, it's a pretty low bill because, you know, your raw materials cost you nothing. It's just waste plastic. So you know, three times zero is zero. I mean, obviously there's associated costs with collecting it and sorting it and all that, you know, so I suppose, you know, that's kind of an inaccurate statement. But the idea, though, is that it's a pretty low cost to begin with. So, you know, you're starting out on the right foot. That turns out to be okay. So, and again, you know, when you look at where this would be used, and that figure I quoted with the amount of barrels that this company puts out every day, so they're putting out 60 barrels of oil a day. This is a system, mind you, now that can be used portably. All right, this is I guess you wouldn't call it like a behemoth system. It's more like a medium-sized system. That this is something that's that can be at least transported from site to site. And this thing is capable of turning out 60 barrels a day out of 10 tons of plastic. Okay, that's not going to be obviously enough to fuel a nation, but if you have a lot of these at a larger scale, then you're going to make a dent. And at 60, gee whiz, 60 barrels of crude a day, let's just say again that the yield from that 60 barrels of crude into gasoline or diesel, all right, let's just hypothetically, and I could be way off, but just say half. So let's say you get 30 barrels of refined product a day out of this operation. 30 times 55 is a lot of gasoline or diesel. That's a lot every day, and you can run a fleet off of that, and you can run it at a reasonable price, and in doing so reduce your landfill too, and reduce your carbon and CO2 emissions, all that good stuff. So that's to me seems like a pretty good bargain. So how much does it cost? I don't know. We'll find out. Let's see if One India maybe has some insight on this. Paul, any idea how much it would cost to refine the crude oil that comes out of this process or any other crude oil?
Oh, boy. Where am I? Here I am. No idea, Gary. Actually, I have comments. I have a comment on that. But let Rick go first. He was next in line, and I'll come back on that one.
All right, good deal. Rick, come on aboard, VXP.
This is N1 VXP. I think we have to understand what that recycle process amounts to. I think according to plastics2oil.com, the actual converting plastic to oil does actually come up with a final product of either diesel, number two heating oil, and or naphtha. So I think there's no refining process like crude oil, but it's the actual final product. I did see another website, and I can't remember where I saw it. It showed about a small portable unit being introduced in Africa where they said, take the plastics, convert it to this oil, and actually use the oil for cooking and heating, or cooking and lighting. So, the actual final product out of the recycling apparently is user-friendly right from the finish. Just a thought, state of Maine, they are actually banning the use of plastic bottles. So anything that comes in the store is all in glass. And they do have a good recycling system where the people do bring their trash to a recycling center, and it's separated out, and it is recycled. And if Kathy's listening, the plastics that are recycled, they do go... they do have certain cities that do have... I can't remember the company, but, you know, they trash where they do pick up recycles. They actually sell that recycled plastic to other companies that make other plastic products. They can't use it in any kind of containers for food, but they use it for actually making other plastic utensils, tools. And something I saw on TV a while back, they actually take and use that with other products, and they make railroad ties to use on the railroad tracks. So they do quite a recycling with the plastics, but this plasticsoil.com, they not only use recycled plastic, but unrecycled plastic as well. You know, products that are not on the market for recycling. I guess leftover plastics from other product manufacturing, and it's quite a thing. I just couldn't believe when I read this article or this website, plasticsoil.com. Quite a bit of information on there. N1TXP back to net control.
Station calling again. Looks like an internet, an IRLP station. Call again, please.
Yeah, this is VK3 Fox Delta Alpha Sierra full suffix VK3 FDAS. Sorry to break in. I was just wondering, is Montreal on a different node number? If so, could you just inform me, please, and then I'll QSY to that number. Would you have one for Montreal at all? Ben here, down in Victoria, Australia, going through the Millicent ILP. VK3 FDAS, listening.
Okay, station, a little bit hard to hear. I caught something about a number. I'm wondering if anybody listening might have been able to understand the message a little more clearly.
One India. Okay, Gary, you had no audio, but I assume you were handing it over to me. That's Den, D-E-N, and I don't know his call sign. I believe he's in Australia, and I'm probably looking for Pete in Montreal, and Pete's not connected to the SCAR server at the moment there, Den, if that's what you're looking for. Other than that, I wouldn't know how to contact him other than email, if that's who indeed you're looking for.
Yeah, QSL, what's your call? What is your call? I think I recognize the voice, over.
Yeah, Dan, we've talked before. This is Paul, WQ1I, in Danbury, Connecticut.
Greetings, Paul. How are you going up there? WQ1I, and WQ1IS. I won't hold it too long, Paul. Yeah, thanks. I was going to try and get in touch with Pete. I don't know whether you guys know, but in New South Wales, that's the next state up from us. There's over 100 fires there, and one, unfortunately, deceased. But we've got four fires up there at the moment. So you might like to have a look on the internet there if you wish. All right, Paul, I won't hold it, mate. It's bright and sunny down here. Many, many thanks. I'll put it back to you, then I'll close and scoot. WQ1I, VK3 FDAS. Fantastic. Cheers.
Okay, Dan, thanks a lot. And look forward to talking to you again one of these days soon. Gary, KC2RMO, back to you, WQ1I.
Cheers, all.
Hey, thank you, Paul, and thank you, Den, and good to hear from you. And we'll go back to Rick, who we kind of didn't want to lose, make sure we didn't lose you in all the excitement. Rick, I did want to say that where you're talking about where you'd seen that on their website about going into Africa, where you see these villagers in Africa where they're talking about using the oil for their everyday needs. I believe that is Mr. Ito. I believe that's how you pronounce it, I-T-O, Mr. Ito, who is the fellow that is in that UN video. And this is what he does. He takes this small-scale machine that he has, and he travels around the world to these various third-world countries, and he shows how the villages can use this machine to take the waste plastic and turn it into oil that they can use for heating and generating electricity, etc. So I believe that must have been Mr. Ito, or might have been Mr. Ito, anyway, that you were seeing. So if you look at the video, you may see him in there. But thanks, Rick, for checking in, and I tell you what, let's do one more round of check-ins if there's folks out there that would like to check in, and we'll wrap it up, I think, a little bit. We'll see where we end up. So one more round of check-ins at least. Let's hear from you right now. This is the TIN. I'm KC2RMO, and this is South Cars.
One India is still working on number 3.
Oh, I'm Charlie Bravo.
Paul, I lost you in the shuffle. I didn't have the piece of paper I used to write people down with in front of me. So go right ahead there, sir. We were talking about the cost of refining. Did you come up with anything?
No, absolutely not. But Mr. Ito, yeah, I understand that his first trip to one of these African villages, you know, he showed up and they were all standing there looking at him, and he said, "Here, I want to show you something. Where can I plug this in?" Anyway, Gary, the point I was going to make about the cost of refining, which goes way back to what seems like now forever with Gordon's question, is that, I don't really know what the cost is to take a barrel of crude and, you know, refine it. The process itself is something I'm very familiar with. I mean, it's essentially a distillation where it's called fractional distillation, and you take a mixture of things and you put them through a distillation column. And in our case, George is probably familiar with this too, distillation. But you put a crude product that has a lot of impurities or a lot of different things in it, and it gets separated out by boiling point. And in a case of an operation like ours, all these different items come off according to boiling point one at a time. In a refinery, their distillation process is different. It's pretty much a continuous process, and depending where along that tall column they take stuff off, they get different mixtures of hydrocarbons coming off. So, but the point being is that whatever the cost of that step would be, it wouldn't be any different for this product, and in fact would probably be cheaper in the sense it's going to be a higher yield. The stuff you're getting out of this plastic thermal depolymerization is probably a heck of a lot cleaner, less sulfur, less all kinds of other garbage in there that are unwanted in the crude oil or have already been removed when the original plastic was made. So what you get out per barrel when you put it through a refining or distillation process will be greater than what you would get out of crude oil that you pulled out of the ground. So that's all I had to say about that. Have really enjoyed the net, Gary. I'm not coming back. This is my last, and then I got to get running. But enjoyed it. Thank you, and thank everybody. Have a great night. WQ1I, Danbury, Connecticut.
Hey, thank you, Paul. First of all, let me tell you, it's always great to have you here, and tonight's been no exception. It's super to have you along. And I appreciate very much your comments, too. I did want to mention, though, that when Mr. Ito gets off the boat and holds these little seminars in Africa, he doesn't have to ask that question anymore, because now he brings a very long extension cord with him. It's all set. He doesn't have to worry about it. But in reading the stuff that I had read, it appeared to me, too, that bears out exactly what you were talking about, that this stuff is pretty clean the way it comes, and it doesn't take too much to take it to the next level. And I'd seen a couple of references to that, too. So maybe that's the case. Maybe it is a little cheaper to refine it, and maybe a little easier too. So that's just one more benefit to the whole thing. So again, my thanks for you being there, and we'll move along to George Lima. Charlie Bravo, come on aboard.
Well, thank you, Gary. I just caught what Paul said, you know, since this plastic was already had been refined, you know, from crude, which the plastic companies paid that cost. You just, another process of refining it, so to speak. So you got the first a couple of them for free. But what I was wondering, you know, when you start talking about oils, such toxic material, when you engage in business, you get to deal with the EPA. And when you start doing, talking refineries, it all depends on at what jump-in point do you want to get started at, you know. If you do your own collection there, well, you know, all that cost is involved. If you want to go gung-ho, you go purchase you a bunch of recycled bins and start in your neighborhood and talk to the people you know and get them online with you and, build the business from there if you wanted to go that route. But my thing was the EPA. You know, that can take a lot of time, and that can take a lot of money for different surveys. And, if you go into a community, you got to get their permission, it might be a rough go to get started there. So I was just kind of wondering about some of those things. I hadn't had the opportunity to go to the site and look at anything. But as you know, thoughts will dance across your mind at times like these. KW4, Lima, Charlie Bravo.
Hey, thank you, George. And, there's going to be consideration, EPA and other things. If you were going to start this as a business, let's say, from scratch, let's say that, you had the capital arranged to buy the equipment, you'd have to certainly do your research on what needs to be done. What compliance do you have to have with the EPA? What are the different surveys, as you say, that have to be done? So that's all there. I think as a municipality too, if you were a city looking to do this for your own benefit, then if you were going to say, okay, we're not going to bury this plastic anymore. We're going to have a plant that turns this into oil, and we're going to run our vehicles off of it, and we'll store it for future use and that sort of thing. They're subject to the same things too, so that has to be a consideration. That's stuff to look for long term, and certainly stuff to be aware of if you're definitely thinking about it. But I do think there's a huge amount of promise to this whole thing, and I do think that as such, you're going to find it's worth the effort too. So if you have to go and do all these surveys and work with a little red tape, then it's probably worth doing so. We're on the TIN tonight, and we're talking about turning plastic into oil. It appears to be something that is not only doable, but desirable to do so. We're kind of winding it down. We're in the bottom half of the second hour. We'll just throw it out there one more time. If anybody'd like to check in, we'd like to hear from you. And other than that, we'll start wrapping things up. So one more round of check-ins, if anybody's willing. Let's go ahead on the TIN net. All right, nobody there. And it's been a great net. I really appreciate everybody's participation. Really good topic, and I hope everybody that's been listening takes a chance to look at the URLs that have been in the text box, and also the one that Rick was talking about, plastic2oil.com. That's plastic, and I believe the number 2oil.com. Interesting topic, and maybe what the heck, maybe someday we're going to be getting a sizable portion of our oil from the stuff that we throw out, and I think that's a great idea. So with that in mind, we'll say so long. This has been South Cars, the South Coast Amateur Radio Service. VoIPNet schedules and general information may be found on the VoIP.SouthCars.com website. Your net control for this session has been Gary, KC2RMO, saying 73 in closing this VoIP session. Thanks for your participation. This net is closed.
This has been the South Cars Outreach Program. Join us again next time for another in-hour series of training sessions for amateur radio operators. Goodbye for now.